From Hollywood, the CBS Radio Workshop. Damage incalculable. 62 square miles of mountains and valleys of farms and pastures reduced to blackened ash. 85 homes burned to the ground. 4 injured. 1 dead. Fire at Malibu. CBS Radio presents the CBS Radio Workshop, dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind. Now a story to challenge man's imagination, a story of disaster and of man's capacity to meet and defeat it, a story of despair and hope. Fire at Malibu, starring Mr. William Conrad as narrator. The Eastern Pacific High. It stretched from Baja, California to Hawaii and north to Anchorage, Alaska, and back south again past Vancouver Island and Puget Sound, past the Farallons and the Channel Islands. Day after day, week after week, it squatted across half of the Eastern Pacific. For 8 weeks, it remained immovable. You couldn't feel it or taste it or see it, excepting on the weatherman's map, but it was there. That vast, high-pressure area, blocking off the rain from the green forests of the Northwest and the brown hills of Southern California. Weather moves from west to east, out of the bleak, black cold of Siberia and Mongolia, down across the Sea of Japan and on east across the Pacific. But now, stopped by the immovable high, the weather veered north across the icy mountains of Alaska, becoming a cold Arctic front, pouring down into the great basin between the Sierra Nevadas and the Rockies, and then spilling across the mountains to the west, becoming warmer and warmer by gravity and compression, until it roared down from the Mojave Desert into Southern California, a full-grown Santana, the wind of Satan, whipping up dust storms, clawing at palm fronds, whining through patios, and fouling swimming pools with the last of autumn's brown leaves. For 8 weeks it blew through the chaparral, drying out the greasewood and the wild buckwheat on the rolling hills, desiccating the live oaks and the sycamores in the canyons. People's skins became dry and itchy. People coughed a lot, and their nostrils tickled as though they were coming down with a summer cold. And they perspired freely as they went about their Christmas shopping in the unusual midsummer heat. By this time of year, there should have been a total rainfall of 4 3/4 inches. Less than a half inch had fallen since July. Christmas Day was beautiful under a blue, cloudless sky. The temperature was 77 degrees. Humidity, 13%. Western Airlines Flight 39 left Salt Lake City at midnight Christmas night, southbound for Las Vegas and Los Angeles. Because of the surface wind conditions, pilot Ben Laubacher brought her in high over the San Gabriel Mountains. He was cruising at 14,000 feet over Fontana at 2:40 a.m. when he made his first contact with the Los Angeles International Airport.
L.A. Tower from Western 39. L.A. Tower from Western 39.
This is L.A. Tower. Come in, Western 39.
This is Western 39 reporting at 14,000 over Fontana and requesting landing instructions. Over.
Hello, Western 39. You're clear to land on runway 25. Wind northeast. Gusty.
Thank you, L.A. Say, that's quite a fire you have down there.
What fire?
Well, there's a whole mountain burning up the coast a ways. I'd guess somewhere back of Point Doom.
I hadn't heard anything about it.
Well, take a look out the tower window.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see it from here. Yeah, I'd better report that.
That you had, boy. Western 39, over and out.
Donna Cruz was fairly new at her job. She joined the Los Angeles County Fire Department as a switchboard operator and dispatcher on October 1st. Early in the morning of December 26th, she was the only operator on duty at the Malibu Fire Station of Agoura, in the San Fernando Valley, some 45 miles west of Los Angeles. At 2:40 a.m., her switchboard lit up like the Christmas tree she had turned off before leaving for work a few hours ago.
Fire department, Malibu Station.
I want to report a fire.
Yes, sir. Where is it?
Well, I don't know exactly, but from where I am, it seems to be up Zuma Canyon.
Thank you, sir.
Looks like the whole mountaintop's on fire.
Yes, we'll take care of it. Excuse me, please. I have another call. Malibu Fire Station.
Headquarters. We have a report from an airplane of a fire back at Point Doom.
Yes, I already have it.
Okay, Malibu.
Battalion Chief George Reichert came in from the kitchen with a pot of fresh coffee to find Donna with more calls than she could handle.
Malibu Fire
Station. He slipped into the chair beside her and took the next one.
Malibu Fire Station, Chief Reichert.
This is Soledad Canyon Station. We can see a fire over in your territory.
Where in our territory?
It appears to be about 5 miles west of Saddle Peak Lookout.
Thank you, Soledad. We'll check.
From an airplane 3 miles above the earth, from a citizen on the ground, from a fire station 20 miles away, a rough sort of triangulation is possible. It is now 2:41 a.m.
I'd put it in the general vicinity of Newton Canyon.
That'll be engine companies 67, 70, 71, 72, and 88?
That's right. Give them the long ring.
The long ring. The warning bell. The alert signal that a dispatch is coming through. By the time the battalion chief has picked up the receiver, the men are awake, wriggling into their gear and scrambling toward their stations on the engine.
Roll to a reported brush fire in the Newton Canyon area.
And they roll. Engine 71 from the Zuma station on Pacific Highway. Number 88 from the Malibu Beach Colony. Number 70 from Las Flores Canyon. 72 from Wachusa. And from across the mountains in Calabasas, number 67. Ripping the stillness of the night after Christmas with the shrill terror of their sirens. The ranchers, the homeowners, the farmers come awake with a start as they hear them scream by, for they live with the fear of fire in these crisp and dusty hills. At 3:40 a.m., 1 hour after the fire was reported, 23 engine companies, 3 bulldozers, 5 work crews, and 4 patrol units. 170 men are fighting the fire. And the fire is winning. Crackling down the mountainsides, roaring through the canyons, whipped by a 50-mile-an-hour wind, forcing back men and machines, backwards and downwards toward the wide beaches and the sea, which surely must stop it. There was no dawn along the beach the day after Christmas. The swirling black smoke merely became gray. And when the stinging hot wind whipped it thin from time to time, toward the east, a bloody ball hung momentarily at the mountain's rim, where men yesterday had seen the sun. Frank L. Dickover, Jr. had driven his wife and 9-month-old daughter to safety, and now he was returning to his home in Zuma Canyon to do what he could to save it. But he never got there. Smoke thicker than any beach fog engulfed his car, blinding him. After the fire had roared by, the highway patrol found the wreck and nearby Mr. Dickover's charred body. He'd broken his leg when the car went off the road. He didn't have a chance to escape. That first morning, County Fire Chief Keith Klinger set up his command post at the Zuma Fire Station on the Pacific Coast Highway. His command now comprised 430 men, including Navy and Marine personnel, moved in by truck from the CV base at Fort Hueneme in Terminal Island. In the firehouse, where the gleaming engines usually stand, gray ladies of the Red Cross serve coffee and sandwiches to smoke-blackened firefighters. In the dormitory, men off the line were treated for eye burn and smoke poisoning. In the kitchen, Bob Singleton set up a press center to accommodate the reporters, radio commentators, and TV newsreelmen.
Battalion 5B to First Assistant Chief. Battalion 5B to First Assistant Chief.
This is Chief Percy. Go ahead.
I think we've saved all the homes in the Zuma Canyon area, but the fire has jumped the highway at Broad Beach and taken 2 big houses.
Chief Anderson to Zuma Station. Chief Anderson to Zuma Station.
Go ahead, Harvey.
Romero Canyon's getting too hot to hold. Gotta have 10 patrols to work around the houses right away.
Okay, Harvey. Did you hear that, Keith?
Yeah. Ramirez goes, Escondido Canyon will be next.
No doubt about it.
Ask the sheriff's office to evacuate Escondido Canyon.
Right away. Captain Sewell Griggers of the Sheriff's Aero Squadron has a bullhorn on his helicopter. He uses it to untangle traffic jams on Los Angeles' far-flung freeways. This morning it is used for another purpose as he flies low and slow up Escondido Canyon.
This is the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Office. Escondido Canyon is in fire danger. Persons still in the canyon are ordered to evacuate immediately. This is the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Office.
And First Assistant Fire Chief Roland W. Percy grimly sums up the situation.
The fire spread very, very rapidly, and within 4 hours, we had over 5,000 acres gone. It's a very fast-moving fire. We cannot say how soon it will be under control. It's burning fiercely on all fronts right at the present time, and the weather conditions are very unfavorable, and reports we have will last for the next 2 days. And there are northeast winds, and they're all very drying winds. We've had this condition now for about 2 months, and there is no moisture left in the brush whatsoever. It's very explosive. We have to be very careful where we place our engine companies and personnel so we do not trap anyone.
Now the fire was shaping into a disaster. As they had in two wars, the mobile canteens of the Salvation Army moved up close to the fire line. At the Webster School on Malibu Canyon Road, the Red Cross set up an evacuation center. And as the refugees poured in on foot, by automobile, and some even on horseback, the stories poured out. There was Mrs. Jean Hasselquist's narrow escape.
We just woke up around 5 o'clock by telephone call from a lovely neighbor, and we looked up and the whole hillside and the mountain range was on fire, and we were quite sure that we weren't going to be in the flames until the last minute when it leaped over the far hillside there, and all of a sudden, the whole hill was just in massive flames, and we just ran for our lives. We just missed the flames by about 10 feet.
By nightfall, this first burning day, 900 men and 100 pieces of equipment were fighting a wholly uncontrolled fire. And 30 houses had burned to the ground, leaving nothing, ironically, but their stone chimneys and fireplaces. Among them was the beach house of TV star Ralph Edwards.
We were fortunate that we weren't in the home at the time because our bedroom faces out on the ocean, so does the children's, and it could very well be that the waves would be making such a noise that we wouldn't have heard the fire creeping up on us. Yes, we did have a lot of wonderful mementos in there, things that were very close to our hearts, but the ones I really feel sorry for are those people who lived on their land, who made their living out of the land, and to have their home go up in flames, that indeed was a tragedy.
The second smoky dawn brings no relief as the fire roars on south toward Latigo Canyon. And here among the bright red fire engines is the blue and gray shortwave truck of radio station KNX and CBS News reporter Hugh McCoy.
It looks as if we're trapped, or at least temporarily stymied up here. The road has been blocked off by flames, which just moments ago have leaped across the road up the side of the hill. Below here in the canyon, there's a house and a number of outbuildings, which in just about a moment from now will be reached by those flames. And up here on the hill, where the flames have jumped the road, another house, a green house, is threatened. I don't think we can make a stand here much longer. Jim Lowe, our engineer, is about ready to evacuate with the KNX mobile unit. We've got to make our way back down this road. The heat is getting more and more intense, and the flames have swept over more than a half a mile of these mountains now, raging, moving very, very fast. The house I told you about a few moments ago down below here is completely enveloped in smoke and flames. The people, we have just learned, have been evacuated from that home. And up here to my right, another house which is still standing is threatened by these flames reaching 20 to 50 feet up into the air as these wind gusts whip the black pall of smoke. Now, that's all from Latigo Canyon. We've got to make our way out. The engines are evacuating now.
That afternoon along Highway 101, the citizens of Santa Maria and Santa Barbara, of Carpinteria and Oxnard, knew something was up. something big, as a convoy of 18 civilian defense pumpers from Northern California roared south, red lights flashing, sirens screaming. Something indeed big was up as the engines from the north pulled into the Zuma fire station.
Go ahead.
We have a reported fire in the Hume track.
Hume track?
Yes, sir. Just north of the sheriff's substation on Pacific Highway. It's traveling very fast. It's already taken several homes.
Thank you. Chief.
Yes, Roland.
Just got a report of a blaze above the sheriff's station.
Well, that's 8 miles east of here. It must be a completely new fire.
It's gotta be.
Order out every available piece of equipment in both the city and county. I'll take these civilian defense engines down there myself.
New fire, 8 miles away, sweeping down the steep cliffside toward homes thickly clustered above the highway. Homes built high for the magnificent Pacific view. A view now obscured by ugly brown smoke choking out the setting sun, bringing an early night to this California Riviera, an aborted night, backlighted by the creeping, crackling, ruby-red line of fire.
This is Todd Hunter reporting from the home of Horace Height at 22140 Pacific Coast Highway. Mr. Height at this very moment is up on the roof in his shorts with a hose wetting down his roof for directly across the street. These flames are roaring down the mountainside with a tremendous wind behind them, and the firemen are on top of two apartments across the street, wetting down the roofs and wetting down the surrounding area in hopes of saving the apartments.
62 engines, 20 of them bumper to bumper along the highway, pour water up the cliff, while the others fight the fire house by house. And below, parked on the road, the householders in their cars, watching the smoke and fire blot out their homes, still gaily outlined in Christmas lights, and then pass on, leaving the homes and the lights intact as it roars on, insatiable, to the west, toward the first fire, the Zuma fire, now contained, but not controlled. And between the fires, the Malibu Beach Colony, the fabled playground of the movie stars. And back in the hills, the homes of simpler folk, and the Serra retreat of the Franciscan Fathers, where on that fiery night of December 27th, prayer performed a small miracle, as Father Robert Schmidt recalls it.
It's a custom the Franciscan order to pray to St. Agatha for protection against fire. So we've been praying, and I think we had a sort of a miracle here last night, because when we left at 11 o'clock, the tongues of flame were leaping over the lips of the hill. We thought the retreat house would certainly be in the path of it. But by some miracle, the wind changed. The flames started heading up the slope rather than down the slope. So we consider that a miracle that we ascribe to the prayers that we said in the last 48 hours.
Father Schmidt was not alone in his prayers on this hopeless night. All over Southern California, the thoughts and sympathies of men of goodwill stretched toward the threatened people of the stricken area. And the thoughts and the sympathy and the prayers seemed not to have gone unheard. That night, the winds died down. The roaring red monster of flame flickered to a faltering standstill. By 10 o'clock Friday morning, as Governor Goodwin Knight asked President Eisenhower to declare a state of disaster in Southern California, Fire Chief Klinger could report,
"While I cannot say the fire is completely controlled, it no longer threatens property or life. At present, it is still out of control on the western perimeter and burning over the Ventura County line. But this is practically uninhabited territory."
"That's fine, Chief. Castro lookout on the line."
"Thanks, Roland." "Chief Klinger speaking."
"I've got a new blaze, Chief.
Oh?
Approximately 1.5 miles northeast of Lake Sherwood, sweeping southwest from Ventura Boulevard on a 3-mile front."
A third fire. By noon, it has swallowed 9 homes on the shore of Lake Sherwood, and pushed by a 35-mile wind, roars on toward the Zuma fire on the other side of the range.
"Anything can happen now. If it joins up with the Zuma burn, we've got it licked. If the winds increase, who knows? Right now, we know one thing. It's out of control."
"Mm-hmm. The sun sank that Friday evening behind a dirty brown cloud of smoke that stretched 50 miles from the San Fernando Valley across the mountains and over the ocean to Catalina Island, sank red and angry, leaving behind its afterimage a corona of fire atop the hills. And 2,000 weary men fought through that last long night. There was good news the next afternoon, qualified in the cautious words of a weary fire chief.
We now have the fire tied up in a slippery knot.
The knot held. And so did the Pacific High. As the evacuees returned to their homes, bizarrely colorful islands in the black and gray landscape, they looked up at the hot, cloudless sky and hoped it would stay that way. Now there was no fear of fire, but of flood. When the rains came, and come they must, what would happen to their homes with no living vegetation in the hills to hold back the waters? Day after day, Forestry Department planes flew over the 26,000 acres of devastated mountains and hillsides, scattering a 500,000 pounds of ryegrass seed. And the Pacific High held. And men ask, will the rains, when they come so heavily the seeds will wash away before they sprout? And men began filling sandbags and building dikes around their homes. And finally, the Pacific High weakened and broke. And the rains came. And once more men prayed. It rained as it should have 2 months ago. It rained all day Friday, the 11th of January, all day Saturday, sometimes mercifully, sometimes fiercely, and no one could be sure. And then, Sunday's dawn burst into a blue sky, lazy with the fleecy clouds that follow a storm.
Daddy, look!
What is it, honey?
Look out the window, the hills. They're all green.
Yes, like a green fuzz across the gray hillsides, the ryegrass had sprouted and pushed its way through the cold ashes like a promise of springtime. There would be food now for the hungry deer in the high hills. There would be tiny roots now holding back the soil against the next rain. And there would be beauty again in Malibu. Because man, who knows so well how to organize for his own destruction, had also learned how to organize for his own salvation.
The CBS Radio Workshop has presented Fire at Malibu, written, directed, and produced in Hollywood by William N. Robeson, and dedicated to the thousands of firemen, deputy sheriffs, foresters, highway patrolmen, Red Cross and Salvation Army workers, soldiers, sailors, Marines, and honor prisoners who prevented a fire from becoming a Holocaust. Fire at Malibu was narrated by William Conrad. The special musical score was composed and conducted by Lynn Murray, and the actors were Norma Jean Nielsen, Court Falkenberg, Larry Thor, Jim Nusser, Barney Phillips, Joe DeSantis, Lou Krugman, and Sam Pierce. Listen next week when the workshop comes to you from New York with the story of a man who lives for laughter, The Crazy Life, starring Henry Morgan. Crackerjack reporters fire the questions at leading government personalities every Sunday night on Face the Nation. For stimulating listening, hear the popular CBS public affairs feature, Face the Nation, tonight. You'll find it a rewarding excursion into the world of current affairs. Now stay tuned for Suspense, which follows immediately over most of these same stations.